And he got his dog hicked up and he went down to Marshall. It's called Fortuna Ledge on the map, ordinarily called Marshall, where a captain of the ATG was in charge of that area and reported what he found. The captain at Marshall of the ATG, his name was Marshall, sent the message and it was grounded at Flat, a place called Flat where the Air Force carried its communications center and went on through. They sent a report from an Eskimo and they didn't send it on through, they killed it. 10 days later, Pete knew he got some ammunition led into one of those balloons and he followed it and he found one of the balloons. He cut the Jap marking out, hooked his dogs up and down the Yukon, 33 miles he goes again, and delivers it to the captain of the guard there, and then action took place. The message went through. They believed the Eskimo. They didn't at that time. And men from the intelligence department, combat intelligence department, were there, and they went out and got the balloon, and they came when we found them and got them. One Eskimo was on a trap line, and he found this strange balloon. He gathered it up, but saw his dog sled. He sleeps in it nights and gets back to his village after a few days, and had a live bomb in it all the time. He slept with that. So the Eskimo did valiant service, and his real service today, he is now in charge of the Eskimo life of the village. And I'll go back farther. The missionaries couldn't quite control them underground in the Kashims, and they said Jesus wouldn't like that. What you do down. They have dancers down there. Most beautiful dance in the world. They don't even touch each other. If they have any dances wrong, your generation has them now. Not them. It's the most delightful dance in the world. And they discouraged it, many of them did. Well, they let the Kashim die. And then this is fundamental in the life of the Eskimo. Susie? Then they had no place to meet. That's where the boy, when he was able to get along without his mama, he joined the Kashim. They lived in the Kashim, the men did. That is where the old men ran the government, taught this boy how to build a kayak to fit him, to balance him. It was a very delicate instrument, and he was taught there how to make the kayak to fit him, and so forth. Well, now they're out of ground, above ground. There's no place to meet. You can't run a government at 40 below zero. You can't meet. You can't organize. So they had to go to the school or to the mission. It's the only place they can meet. I was in Point Hope 30 years ago when the Eskimos came over and said, we'd like to have dance Saturday night. Yes, the teacher, BIA teacher too, said, no, not this weekend. Maybe next weekend. He was making home brew. That's what actually happened. He didn't want him there. I was living with him weekend. Well, now that breaks down all government when they can't meet, when they can't get together. So I realized that fundamental situation, and we began to build kashims, armories, you want to call it. I call them kashim, for these natives in their village, and I gave them the key. I used surplus material I bought from Nome. Now, the National Guard, under General Nekrasin, have built 65 nice armories in 65 villages. The Eskimo has the key to it. When they want to dance, they can have it. Government is now returning to the Eskimo people, and they're going to run their government. And the ATG has did a great job. There was a vacuum which anything could have moved into. Today, they are the leaders of the people, and they have 65 kashims, armies you call them, and they have their dances and their social life there, and it's also used for military as the first call on it. I was called back into service this winter. Believe it or not, that's the answer I give when you ask how old I am. Same answer that the Eskimo gave me. I hope you'll take that. Many moons ago. But this last winter I was called in. They were having some difficulty. The scouts. I transferred over from the ATG. I spent 4 years in the National Guard. The gunner came and saw me. In 46, I quit the service. War was over. And 2 years later, he came and got me to go back and take those ATG people and transfer them over to the National Guard. So that's what made the National Guard. And they were resigning. And the general called me in. He said, we're having some difficulty. We don't know just what it is. Have you got any suggestions? I says, yes, sir, I have a suggestion. I suggest you put Major John Schaefer, Jr., who is an Eskimo from Kotzebue, who is a major qualified under your National Guard regulations, headman and scout battalion number one in Nome. Has 500 men under him. And no white men over him to jerk the strings. They're just getting tired of some white man jerking the string all that time. I think it'll help you. They called me back later and said, we've taken your advice, but Major John Schaefer wants you to go with him and see the Eskimos and find out our problem. I said, I'll be happy to go back. I thought it'd be all of your own. They gave me a plane, and I went with John Schaefer and one of the generals of the National Guard, and I had a moving picture, which is, you should have the moving picture. It's a story. I made three pictures. I have one out now. I finished about a year ago. It's the early life of the Eskimo. When I met him 30 years ago, he lived the same he's lived for 30 years, for six generations. And he lived wearing Labrys and so forth. And I had that picture. And I have a great funeral, a Moses funeral in Nunavak Island. And you should have it for your records. I use it once in a while. It should have more exposure. The Arctic Laboratory in Barrow have one copy. Well, I'll get back onto my subject now, if I can. What was I talking about, Susie? Where was I?
Well, you started to talk about when they disbanded, and then you got back to where they called you last winter.
Well, I was called back into service, and I went out with them. I used this picture to get them together. I have as high as 900 single meetings. You can't organize people if you get them together and talk to them. It's difficult today with the radio, the television. They don't leave it. They don't care for public meetings. But this picture, they came. And they set a big poster out, said Muktuk is returning to the Arctic, and they came to see me. They knew me. I picked him up. I'm their Abraham Lincoln. Now, I'll tell you the real trouble I had was the white trader, the shippers, the politicians were all organized, and they had that Eskimo organized as a second-class citizen. He was an economic slave. That's what he was. The white trader had control of the supplies, and he bought the furs, and he gave him money good for only in his store. So no matter what he paid the furs, he jumped his price up to make himself whatever he wanted. His conscience was only his guide, and sometimes the conscience got weak. I know they were selling old, Eskimo liked his old World War I tight-laced breeches at the knee down. And the trader there, I won't name him, he's dead now, he was buying them for about 20 cents a pair and selling them for $20 in Selawik. And Paul Ballett, the lieutenant in charge there, he wanted me to come to he heard about this OPA, Office of Price Administration. He said, we charge them too much. I said, I can't come there. I'm a military man strictly, and I can't get into that. But they had the meeting, and they sent it in and said that the major was there, and they used me, you know, in many ways. And I got in all kinds of jams that way. And the OPA man came out, McCutcheon, Steve McCutcheon. He was an OPA administrator here. And he said it's too high and they had to cut the price down. Well, now that white trader is a pretty ingenious man. He just went right around them. They were getting muskrats then. Muskrats are worth $2 a skin. He said, Pence, 10 muskrats, one pair of pants. That's $20. Went right around the OPA just like that. And they carried on. The white trader was ruling the Arctic. He was the boss in the Arctic. And he didn't want anyone to interfere with his income. When you trample a man's income, you got trouble. And I had that problem. They didn't want me to organize the Native. They tried to get rid of me. The book, you'll understand why I had all that trouble. I had to stand the Attorney General of the Territory of Alaska up in the North Pole Bakery in Nome. He came in there. When Bob Bartlett ran for delegate to Congress, he ran for the same office. Yeah, I went in for breakfast. He picked his lunch up, came over and sat across the table from me. He says, Major, when are you going to start your political campaign? I said, Mr. Attorney General, he's dead too now, but I won't need him. I don't like what you say, and I don't like the tone of your voice. Elucidate. He said, when are you going to start running guns out ahead of me to get votes for your friend Bartlett and Greening? Greening was sponsoring Bartlett. I said, we're wearing sidearms then. I was in uniform. I said, stand up. Get up. There were about six people arrested. I had to meet opposition when it came, or they had driven me out. They intended to drive me out of the Arctic. Now, let me tell you the story of the Native people. The white man thought him as childlike. I said, I've contacted 1,000. Everyone has joined up. I asked them to stand up and defend their shores, and they are standing up as I get to them. I want to tell you that if you interfere with a military organization in time of war, and I can prove it on you, the penalty is death. And Mr. Attorney General, I don't mind shooting you or anybody else gets in front of this military army. I'm going to build this Native army. You understand that? He was white as a sheet now. And he wanted to shake hands, and I said, you're a politician. You mean it? He says, yes. I shook hands. It's all over. I had to deliver that message to three of the highest-ranking men in the territory of Alaska. This man was a member of the cabinet of the governor, whom I was my commanding officer. He said he asked for it. So that was the problem I had, and I took on all comers because I decided to organize these great and wonderful Eskimo people, the greatest people any man ever met. I walked high adventure by air, by land, and by sea, and by dog team. The governor said, I'm the only man to ever see all the Eskimos. And I saw them time and again. My beat was 154th parallel west. That's a line from Barrow down to Kodiak Island. And it is bordered, that piece of land, by the Beaufort Sea on the north, by the Arctic Ocean on the northwest, by the Bering Sea on the southwest, and the Pacific Ocean surrounds that piece of property. It went from Butter Island out to Attu. The first man killed was a teacher at Attu. I had told him I'd be out there and organize them at Attu. That's the last island on the Aleutian chain. It's 1,500 miles out from the mainland. And before I got there, I said, oh, what I want is information of the enemy. Suddenly, the Jap fleet arrived in there, and he, according to the first story, made for the radio shack to communicate with me. I'm not sure it's true from notes we found on the Jap bodies. But that was what he was there for, the information. That's what the ATG was for. Eyes and ears for the Army, intelligence. The duty of a scout is to observe, report, harass, retard, and fall back when overpowered. And the information is what we really wanted. And they could do that. And they were qualified and were able to do that. They picked up a Navy ship that was shot down by Russians and landed in the sea near St. Lawrence Island, rescued all five of them, and they were decorated for that. On the Yukon at Ruby, a plane went down and they found all but the sergeant. And they couldn't find him. And the ATG been out of maneuvers, and they came in. They said, they told him their problem. They said, well, we go hunt for him. We've been 3 days on trail, but we hunt. Well, they found him. They didn't know the angles in the snow. there was an angle out there that was different. Went there, and it had been snowed, and our sergeant was there. He was dead. But there was a different angle, and they picked him out quick. And they were decorated for that. And they had several decorations by the Army, and the Army today says the Eskimo soldier, the scouts, as they're called, is the best soldier they ever had for Arctic duty. They meet every year out here for 2 weeks. You'll see 1,000 of these men come in here. First time I brought them in here, the first time they ever walked on pavement was here. And the people here said, who are we? We invaded? Who are these people? I said, just your brown cousins. Where are they? I said, live up in the Arctic, 1,000 miles from here, out along the shore of the Bering Sea and the Arctic Ocean. Most rugged, real people. You see them here, maybe you don't think so, but you put them on the trail and they're the best soldier the Army ever had for Arctic duty. That's the story of the ATG. I could talk to you on many things. I don't like what's happening now. I was a member of the Council Convention, met in your town of Fairbanks for 75 days. It's a cool, rugged country. I respect you, Fairbanksons. You can take it. We are a sovereign people, Susie, up here. But we are not being treated now as a sovereign people. A bunch of people from the outside, bird watchers, I call them, are telling us how to run this country, what to do with it. Want to put it all under a reservation for wilderness sake. For wilderness sake. They've closed us all up to it. They've stopped this oil to it. They've stopped this pipeline. We're in trouble here now. I'm in building business. I'm building 100 homes. I got no market for them because that pipeline has been held up. The ecology boys, we never heard that word in the region. We don't know how to spell it yet, but it's every place. And they want to protect our wolves. And to hell with the caribou and the moose. They don't know what they're doing. One caribou can kill as high as 70. One wolf can kill as high as 70 caribou in a year. He likes hot meat. He'll follow the herd. I know. I follow them. I think we should start a program to defend, to protect the rattlesnakes of these people down below. Same thing. They don't know what they're talking about. Their idea is great, but it's wrong. Now they... These bird watchers, I'm a member trustee of the Yukon Dam, the Rampart Dam. We had it all over, engineered past it. We need that power now. It had been the biggest power plant in the free world. And they stopped it. I'll tell you how they do it. There are so many of them, they write their congressman, they write their senator. Until he doesn't make a decision, he just withdraws and makes no decision. That is not the democratic way of we're supposed to run this country. They can kill a man on issue before it comes to a hearing by their writing to them and folding them up. Now, they had a hearing here. Former partner, Wally Hickel, in the building out here he was. He's trying to give 10,000 acres down here at Cropper Center to the bird watchers. That's as big as two small states. We're a big land. And I'm not all for it. I said, I'll be for it if you let an Alaskan organization run it. But you take it to Washington, D.C., it's dead. Let us make the mistakes if it can be made. We'll make them, and we'll make less than you make down in Washington, D.C. We're a sovereign people, and we should be treated as sovereign people. We lost Greening and Bartlett. They had standing on committees. They could take care of us better. Now they got a couple of freshman senators down there. And they're just running right over us. Now, in the great, we have more coal here than any part of the United States. And they decided when coal was the king of all power, the coal men of Pennsylvania and so forth, through Congress, decided to preserve the coal of Alaska and keep it for posterity. And we don't need it now. And the bird watchers today are trying to shut this great field of oil up. The world, maybe the world's biggest deposit of oil lies in the Arctic. It's a great big wasteland. I wish these fellows that are yelling about destroying the virgin country would see that once. They were doing no damage up there. Now, we were getting to be a second-class power, Susie. We were losing our oil. It was running out in 10 years. If you don't have your own oil, you're not a first-class power. If you got to depend on some other nation. This discovery on the North Slope put us back in the first-class power for all time. That will last for 50 years. We're taking out 2 million barrels a day. It'll run for 50 years. We don't know how much more will be discovered up there. But they're now trying to close that up. These bird watchers would close that right down if they could. That's their intention. We're a sovereign people, and we're going to be treated as sovereign people. And my message to you fellows trying to run this country, you run your own country. You messed it up. We'll take care of this country. If any mistakes we make, we'll make them. We're going to do a better job than you will. But right now, they've got us stymied on that pipeline. I think Mr. Hickel should have issued the order, which he could have. The birdwatch has got him under control, I think. And they've quieted him down. He should have given the order to put the pipeline in, and we had it flowing. That's our great wealth. The nation needs that to keep us a first-class power, that reserve of oil. No, I don't want to go any farther. I've gotten away from the Eskimo, but the Eskimo will go along with us. He'll not stop that pipeline. We just give him a job and give him his fair shake, and we're going to make this settlement, I think, of the Eskimo. My advice to them is to make the best deal they can make, but make it now. They'll never be in a better shape to make a deal. It won't be exactly what they want. I'm on the side of the Eskimo all the way. It's his land, and this Uncle Sam's ready to give him $1 billion. That's a lot of money. It's a lot of anything. And we've got 20, 40, maybe 100 billion barrels of oil in Alaska. And that's our bid for a first-class power for all time. Mm-hmm. Let's begin to take this oil out. We'll take care of the ecology. We'll protect it. It's been done all over the world, and it'll be done here. Half of Alaska's mountains will never be touched. They'll always be there. This hue and cry about the ecology's gone too far. I'm all for pure water, and I think we could clean up a little. And we will. But let us do it. That's the only message I got to the outside world. And they're coming here by... This town, the mayor says, will double in 5 years. We're now over 100,000, maybe 120,000. In 30 years, I've seen a jump from 3,500 to 120,000 people. I predict in the book I have, Men of the Tundra, that it'll double in 10 to 12 years. Now, in the book, The Men of the Tundra, I could have told you a story about the little men. Uncle Sam fought two battles and won them. I never reported it. It's a battle against the little men. But it wouldn't have, the white man wouldn't have stood it. The book, Men of the Tundra, was to give the Eskimo image a place in the sun, a compliment, which he's entitled to. And that's what I did with that book. I gave him a place in the sun and an image, which they need. And there are 3,700 heroes that I recorded at the back of that book. Men who took up arms and defended their shores. Now, this could go on for days, Susie. Let's knock it off now.
Okay, there's just one thing I'd like you to recount, is how you got your nickname, Muktuk.
Oh, the nickname Muktuk, Susie. This True Magazine wrote that whole story 25 years ago. I came into Point Hope. My dog team, I'd made 65 miles. That's about all I can make in a day's time. I tried to make 85 miles one time from Teller to Nome. Sammy Moog was my dog musher. We took off from Teller, and we got to Sinrock, a place about 20 miles from Nome. And we went in for tea, and it was warm. It was 30 below zero, and we kind of softened up, and the Eskimo women take your outer garments right off, hang off and dry them, then you get you tea and something to eat. And I dozed, and I got up to go out. And the Eskimo said, Major, we short of tanning fluid here. Yours is just as good as ours. And he handed me a pail, and before the women and the kids, I contributed to the welfare of a whole race of people. What have you done, Susie? And we didn't make the 80 miles. We stayed all night right there. But I came into Point Hope After 65 miles, you're tired. The dog mush is the hardest working dog in the team. I had 14 dogs that's mushing through there. Always had a good dog, English Eskimo with me. He's the best dog man there is. And I parked my dogs outside of my friend whom I knew well. And I crawl in, have a tunnel, and you come up to the dome-like place. And he was just having dinner. And it was muktuk. And the Eskimo was taking out lots of slabs of muktuk, and we were eating. And it's hot in there. We stripped to the waist. We tell many the Eskimo likes to visit. He visits all night. He wants to know about the neighbors around. That lasts the world. And we visit. And we have much laughter and much talk, much eating. And finally, I got up. Now, in the Arctic, they have champion eaters. And he said, "You through?" I said, "No, I'm just straightening out. I'm going to settle down and have dinner now." He say, "I give up, you champion." I was in a contest, won the contest, and didn't know I was in the contest. Well, that's the story as it goes.
That's great.
I'll get you a new cup of coffee.